Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast, and you're tuning in right after the Mexican Grand Prix, and I'm being joined by two guests. First of all, Sam, how's your voice after a week of celebrating your birthday?
Oh, you had to put that in there. You know what? Voice is a little rough, but that's okay. That's okay. We're here to talk about the race, and I definitely, birthday or no birthday, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Well, I'm happy you made it. And no better way to talk about the Mexican Grand Prix than by having a Mexican guest on our podcast. Cesar is joining us this week. Cesar's been playing Forecast F1 for a good while, and you're also one of the moderators in the WhatsApp Forecast F1 channel, in both channels actually, the English and Spanish spoken one. So it's great to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you all for inviting me. I know it's been a few races coming, but we finally got it for the Mexican one. So thank you for inviting me. Very excited to join you both on this one.
Yeah, and I think, well, we've been saying it for the past podcast, but again, this one, I think plenty to talk about. Sam, did you enjoy the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that it was a great weekend. I think there's a lot to talk about. And I think we saw quite a few battles and even looking at quite a few penalties, I guess. Well, you know, for some drivers, we'll talk about.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get to that part too. Let's talk about the Friday first, where we had two practice sessions. I think both practice sessions were slightly abnormal in the sense that in the first one, we saw a lot of rookies. So we saw Oli Behrmann in Ferrari. We saw Andrea Kimi Antonelli driving again the Mercedes like he did a couple of races ago for a practice session. Patricio Ward for McLaren, the Mexican driver in his home country. Felipe Drugovic for Aston Martin. And we also saw Robert Schwarzman for Stake Sauber, who has been driving a couple of sessions now in F1, practice sessions. Other than that, FP1 was noteworthy for a pretty big crash, actually, between Albon or Behrmann, or, well, I think Behrmann was mostly just a bystander, but a pretty heavy one there for Albon. How did you interpret that, Cesar? Because was Albon's, did he react because of seeing Behrmann, or was it just a standalone, you know, slip and did the two hit each other?
I think from what I saw and obviously heard the commentators, I maybe don't think he was expecting Oliver to pull out there at that moment, kind of like slow down a little bit, and that caught him by surprise. And I think he was taking the corner right there, and maybe he let go of the gas, and that kind of made his wheel spin a little bit, and that's why he went off. So I think, just an unfortunate event.
I think unfortunate is the right way to put it. Albon's been having a couple of car repairs in the last couple of races. Seems like, I don't know, is it additional pressure on him with another driver in the team now who's performing quite well, Sam?
Well, I do think that from a time perspective, you're looking at the issues that he's been facing lately do coincide with the changes in the driver pairings. However, I will go back and say with Logan, he didn't have a lot of pressure because he was the one that was performing quite well in the Williams itself. But yeah, I mean, I would imagine that it probably plays a role. You're looking at a situation where for any driver, the pressure and the mental stamina and stability that you have going in on a constantly changing spectrum, whether it's the track or whether it's the car itself, that is going to, I have no doubts, play a role. Whether or not it is the main contributing factor to his performances, I'm not sure. I know that he also has had a few unfortunate things that have just, I mean, regardless of being with Williams, he's had a few unfortunate situations with the car's performance. And then even, yeah, this weekend, there was a few things that later on we'll get into. I keep touching on looking ahead for some reason this week, but there's even a few things later on that, I mean, were just unfortunate circumstances that ended up with a result that he was probably not hoping for.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good read of the situation altogether. Before we get ahead of ourselves, in FP1, we also saw a little red flag for debris on the track. Antonelli hit that. I think Verstappen was complaining about it. Mentioning Verstappen, there were some engine worries for him during that session. And I think that made us all think where we were going to put Verstappen in our predictions. I know, Sam, you were very much doubting also whether to put him in actually in first place or somewhere else. But yeah, again, now I'm also getting ahead of myself. Perhaps something else to mention is the 400th race weekend for Fernando Alonso, which he celebrated with a pretty nice helmet. I went into the stats because it was clearly mentioned it was his fourth 400th race weekend, but not his 400th start. So do you guys know how many actual starts they've counted for him?
Oh, no, but I would imagine it's a considerable amount, considering he has 400 races. So what's the number?
Yeah, so so it's the 400th weekend that he's participating in, but they're counting 397 starts. I don't agree exactly with that count, if I got to be honest. So I went into looking what are the three that they are not counting, and there's two that are pretty obvious that are not race starts. So one is Russia 2017, where he didn't start because he had at the reconnaissance lap, at the formation lap, he had an issue, so he didn't actually start that race. Then there's the USA Grand Prix in 2005, the infamous one where only six cars started the race. He was in Renault back then. But then there's also the Belgium 2001 Grand Prix, which had a very heavy crash at the beginning of the race. So after five laps, there was a red flag. And then he was driving the Minardi at that time, and he didn't start the restart. But, you know, given that five laps had already been driven, I would actually count that. So I'm gonna stick to counting 398.
Right down to the final stride. I wouldn't expect anything less from you. But I will say his helmet, it was something that was really, really cool, where it had a snapshot of obviously like a film reel. I thought that was a really, really creative thing.
Yeah, I love that actually. It looked really, really good. Let's move a little bit into FP2. We had another crash in FP2. It was Russell who hit the barriers. In the last couple of races, last race, of course, in the USA Grand Prix, he also had a crash during qualifying. So, he had his engineers working on the car again. Other than that, I think it's safe to say that FP2 wasn't a good measurement for any of us making predictions, because we had the Pirelli tire tests. So we had a 90-minute session, but I don't think we learned a lot from that. Cars also couldn't make any setup changes because of it. So it was, I don't know, I watched it. It was an interesting watch for 90 minutes, but since you don't really know what type of tires there are, they were testing also a C6, an even softer tire for next year. I suppose perhaps that's something that could be used in Monaco, in theory. But that left us with an FP1 session with very little time on the board, and then an FP2 session where you couldn't really make anything up. So all in all, it felt a bit like going into predictions for forecast again blind, just like we did on the last sprint weekend, and which we're going to do on the next sprint weekend, because we're only 1 week away from another one. So how do you feel about making predictions blindly, Cesar? Do you prefer to make them with the knowledge of the FP2 sessions? Do you like the setup with making them blind for sprint weekends? How do you look at that?
I think it's exciting doing the blind ones, especially now that the field is so close and we're having great racing throughout the field. Everyone is, you know, a few seconds apart. It's not like the last 2 years before, I guess. I enjoy it, to be honest. You can only guess so much. You know, okay, McLaren's probably going to be up there. Ferrari, I mean, we've seen Ferrari come back recently, and I myself enjoy it. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I love being able to predict blind. I think that it just adds that extra added element of excitement. And similarly to what you're saying, like, you have everybody that's on a level playing field in a sense, because we are all going in without truly knowing who's going to have the upper hand.
Yeah, and you mentioned there last season where, of course, it was a bit more straightforward to predict blindly. You're completely right. It's very tough this weekend, even sorry, this season, even with knowing FP1 and FP2, it's still very unclear who to predict. I mean, I felt going into this weekend that the Ferraris were going to be very fast because of a lot of slow corners on this track, but then when we saw FP3, of course we'd already made our predictions, then with FP3 it actually looked like the McLarens were far ahead of the Ferraris. I think with their quali runs they were about half a second faster, if not more. So yeah, I felt that I'd made a mistake, but anyway, we'll get into what the what the outcomes were of that. Actually, I'm just looking at previous year, since I mentioned previous year, I was curious actually where in forecast you ended up, Cesar. I'm seeing that you and Sam were very close competitors during the 2023 season of Forecast F1, because Ooh. You finished 72nd and Sam finished 70th. So that was a very wow. close call.
Great minds think alike.
I agree.
So yeah, we then go into qualifying, and I think right away, session one, Q1, I think more than enough food for some conversation, because we saw two drivers that perhaps are not, well, I don't know. Actually, Perez doesn't make it very often into Q2 and Q3 anymore, but he was one of the drivers that didn't either this weekend. So did Piastri, because he had track limits on his first run in turn 12, and then just altogether set a bad lap at the end of that session. So both of them were out, and I guess very sad for the Mexican fans there in the circuit, Cesar.
Yes, unfortunately, 2 years in a row of misery for the Mexican people. I mean, last year, I guess it was good up until turn one. And in this one, yes. I mean, we probably all knew that he wasn't going to be very very close to the top. But I myself said, you know, it's his home race. You know, a lot of drivers during their home race, they perform better just because of the energy, the atmosphere. And I mean, Mexico Grand Prix, I don't know if y'all been there. I have been there and it's amazing. And I cannot imagine being a Mexican driver and experiencing that. So I said, okay, maybe that's going to give him that extra push. But, you know, getting out of P18 was very shocking to me. So
yeah, I mean, it was unfortunate to see him land there. And I can only imagine, obviously, feeling the weight of being in your home race and being with a crowd as electric as the Mexican people. I mean, I've heard so many great things about the crowd and to hear it, obviously, from your perspective. And I'd love to hear more about it. But it obviously, I can only imagine how disappointing that would be for him. We also add the element of the obvious and the fact that, you know, with Red Bull, you have the heat in that second driver's seat, and there's always the rumors and the talk, and it almost seems like every week there's a different driver that's the subject of conversation as to who would potentially take your seat. And I can only imagine the mental strain that takes, being in a position like that, where you never, you already probably don't feel comfortable, and then you have to go to your home race and perform. So I don't think that's an easy place to be.
Well, I mentioned you two being very close together in previous season. I'm just looking at where everyone put Perez in their predictions, and I see that the both of you actually had him on P8, so I think neither one had great expectations.
Really?
Looking at the usually forecast predictions tell the truth of what people really think are gonna happen. Actually, I didn't even put him in my top 10 at all, but it was sad to see. I was actually hoping for him to bounce back. Of course, has been having a tough series of races now, so yeah, it's a tough one to take. Also for the fans, and I agree you saying, Sam, that the Mexican fans, actually we all three of us were witness of because there was a lot of Mexican fans at the Canadian Grand Prix, where all three
That's
of us
right.
were. Sam Cesar was also at the Canadian Grand Prix, so yeah, I agree, sad for the fans.
And we could also talk about Piastri and his shocking exit. I mean, I think it was definitely a shock, because we're so accustomed to the level of consistency that he does have on qualifying. He's been very strong this season from a qualifying perspective, even from a race perspective. So, I mean, the fact that he was out in Q1, I think also can be a very good point to look at when it comes to actually how good of a driver he is, that this is something that would bring a shock because of the fact that his consistency is usually so well. But yet again, a situation where he was heading into a very, very tight battle at this point for the team itself, for McLaren with the constructors, which the window has, especially after this race weekend, shortened in terms of competition with Ferrari. And so every point is going to matter, and even including for Lando and his battle right now for the Drivers' Championship. So I think to have Piastri come out of this and be in a position where he's starting at the back of the grid, that's obviously a disappointing result for McLaren, because it isn't what they are hoping when it comes to maximizing points for the team and also for Piastri as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Then on going into the Q2 session, I think for me the main highlights were both Haas's making it into Q3. I wanted to say again, well, last week in the USA, of course, it was only Magnussen because Hülkenberg made a little slip up, although they did for the sprint race. So I don't know, it's been quite the resurgence for Haas. We talked about it with Ajit on the podcast last week that we didn't expect any of that at the beginning of this season, but they've been doing very, very well. And also Gasly make it into Q3. That was somewhat of a surprise to me, with Ocon not getting further than the Q1 session, actually only P19. He would later decide to start from the pit lane. So yeah, that was not all what happened in Q2, because we also saw Yuki Tsunoda making a spin and crashing and causing a red flag, which in the end resulted in some drivers not being able to set the final lap. But other than that, Sam, any other highlights there in Q2?
No, I mean, it was a nasty crash for Yuki, and but ultimately I think that kind of didn't really leave a lot more that we were going to see from Q2.
Right, and then we had Q3, which was for me a very interesting watch. First of all, because that first lap from Verstappen was cancelled because of track limits, which made it very interesting, because, you know, him not having a banker lap is always, you know, not just for him, but for any driver, of course, not setting a banker lap. Yeah, on that last lap, do you take full risk? Do you go full out or do you not? So that's always an interesting watch. But I think in the end, we can conclude that it was Carlos Sainz who dominated that session, because actually both of the laps that he set, that first lap and the second lap, would have been enough for pole. That first lap was a 1:16.055, and that later lap, the one that actually got in pole, was a 1:15.946, so quicker than Verstappen's fastest time on that last run, and a very, very good result for him. I think that's his first pole this year, so I think a good way to, well, I guess we're only halfway talking into the weekend, but a good way for him to start the Sunday with, you know, him knowing that this is going to be one of the last, I mean, we now only have four races left. So, you know, with those last races for Ferrari, I guess he wants to set a mark and show what he's made out of. And I think in the qualifying session, he really showed that he was quicker than all of the rest, also quicker than his teammate, Leclerc, who qualified on fourth position, because we had still Verstappen and Norris in between the two Ferraris. So altogether, very impressive performance, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I think it was pretty good from Carlos, especially, like you said, Leclerc being a qualifying expert. He's pretty good at it, and to beat his teammate, I think it was good. And like you said, it was not only that last lap, but the previous one. And he made sure he let his engineer know when they told him that's the fastest lap, and he said two fastest laps. I thought that was funny. But Yeah, no,
Yeah, you're
that's
right.
great for him. You know, it's one of those things that, well, I guess when I thought about it, I was like, oh, that's great for Carlos, but also kind of like you said, also bittersweet, right? Because four races left, he knows the team started to, you know, get good results. They got a 1-2 in Austin the weekend prior. Now he's getting pole, so very sad for him to, you know, to be in this position where he's noticing the car is coming up now and he's not going to be there next year.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole weekend there was a lot of energy surrounding him, at least in my opinion, that he just looked like he was on point, whether it was through the practice sessions, obviously through qualifying, and he looked very, very strong. So going into the race, I think you have quite a bit of momentum at that point, and it was really going to boil down to whether or not he was going to be able to restrain Max, because clearly Max was, as we all know, is a very strong driver from the start.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just to round off the rest of qualifying, I think that well, I've mentioned the first four positions. We then had the two Mercedeses, Russell qualifying ahead of Hamilton, and you know, with the last four cars, there being two Haases, one Alpine, and a Williams, I think it was interesting to see that actually Magnussen put it on P7 and Gasly on P8. If I would have guessed, I would have probably guessed Hülkenberg to do a little bit better than he did and qualify a rest ahead of the other three that I just mentioned. But very good result from Magnussen, second race in a row out qualifying Hülkenberg. And again, I mentioned Gasly in Q2, but to set it on P8, I think is an outstanding performance if we look at the Alpine. I mean, the Alpine's not been quick this year. Usually the Renault engine was always good at in Mexico with the higher, you know, it being 2,000 meters above or even 2.2 above sea level, and that always made the Renault engine perform very well. I don't think that performance gap is really there anymore. So yeah, again, like I did in Q2, comparing that to his teammate, very, very good result by him. And I guess there's nothing else left than to talk about the actual race, and I'm excited to talk about it. And I think it would be fair to start at the very beginning and start at lap one, where we saw quite a few things happening at the same time, Sam.
Quite a few things happening at the same time. Chaos, which we do see sometimes at the Mexican Grand Prix. And I think that obviously, if we're starting at the very top of the list, we saw Max have a great start and be able to take the advantage over Carlos. And then we saw Lando entering the mix, and that obviously spiraled from there for a few laps and became a little bit of a challenge and a very once again, we're seeing an on-track battle between Lando and Max, and a lot of I would say a lot of intensity at this point brewing between the two of them. But more so, before I even go there, because I think that'll be a more of an extended conversation about the results between the two of them this weekend, I would say we saw quite a nasty crash. Yuki yet again being out, which was really unfortunate, as well as Albon. And from what it looked like, I mean, with the cars being as close as they were, and obviously they decided not to penalize anyone for this, it did look, however, like Gasly had tried to just squeeze and there wasn't enough room. Yuki obviously was trying to come up at a point where it was gonna be close. It would have been a very close situation if they hadn't touched at that point, given the amount of space. So unfortunately, it was a result that ended with both of them retiring. And yeah, I thought that at the end of the day, the decision was right, that it was a racing incident. Cesar, what were your thoughts on that? Did you believe that it was a racing incident as well?
Yes, I think you know, we all know that it's absolutely chaos on that, what is it, 800 and something meters straight at the beginning of the Mexican Grand Prix. So most of the time a lot of things happen. I was thinking something was going to happen at the top with Lando, Max, and Carlos going up at turn one, but that didn't happen. But yes, I mean, Yuki really pushed it by going on the left side. I think we saw that he may have touched the grass a little bit, and that's when he came back on. At that point, I think Albon was right in the middle between Yuki and, I think you said, Gasly. And, I mean, it was a racing incident. Everyone's very squeezed in there. Gasly moves. Albon tries to avoid him. Yuki's, like, right next to him. So it was kind of, like, unavoidable racing incident. I don't see anyone at fault. What do you think, Anton?
Yeah, I would say the same. I would say the very same. And at the same time, like Sam was saying there, at the very front with the battle that Sainz and Verstappen were fighting, you could see that, Verstappen had a very, very good start. And then Sainz not making the corner, and he went onto the grass, then having to give the position back. It was actually quite a clever move, because I felt that if he wouldn't have done that and tried to stay on track, Norris would have probably also overtaken him, even Leclerc. So this way he only conceded one position, which later on he was able to claim back. But we'll get to that. Before we do, your fellow country member didn't really see where the lines of his grid spot was, Cesar.
Yes,
it was somewhat awkward.
It was like adding more stuff to it, right? It's like, all right, he's starting from the back, and now that happened. And I thought it was funny when he was under investigation, and then his engineer came up on the radio and said, like, you're under investigation for false start, and he even says, nope, it was a great start. I'm like, come on, man, like, just admit it. You obviously didn't stop at the bright yellow line that you're supposed to stop at. I mean, it was a great start, but I mean, he also had a few meters of advantage. Regardless, he did make up five positions from it, but it for me, it was like, come on, man, like, you cannot be doing those kind of things. But again, we go back to a lot of pressure, you know, home race. You have Liam Lawson on RB knocking on the door. And it could have been also the case for, I mean, just thinking about things, Yuki, right? You know, he may have gone for a gap that maybe wasn't really there, or maybe he didn't think about long-term on the race, but he also has Liam Lawson, who I think Red Bull are kind of like seeing, all right, who are we going to promote to the next team? So I think a lot of things happen. But yes, very, very unfortunate for Mexico once again.
Yeah, true.
It was unfortunate, because I did think that had that not have happened with the false start, he really did have a great start after that. I mean, he made up the five positions. I think that it was very well timed, well executed. And he would have been in a really great spot to be able to carry on from there and hopefully put himself in contention to actually gain some points. So it was definitely an unfortunate result. But to your point, Cesar, I do think I completely agree with you in the respect that, you know, the pressure probably is playing a part.
Yes.
I think
what else?
Both of you are very right about that.
I guess I was just going to add, like, okay, he did that. He got a few positions, and then they got him the 5-second penalty, which I thought, you know, Red Bull is still a good car. I think, okay, he can make those up. He can, you know, get an advantage quite big enough to make up for those 5 seconds. And then I guess we'll go into what happened next. But
True. Yeah, well, what happened next was that we first saw the safety car because of that Tsunoda Albon crash, who both DNF'd, Gasly didn't. And actually, that safety car took quite a while. I think we went back on track when we were crossing the line for lap number 7. Pretty normal restart on the safety car. And then just 2 laps later, we saw Sainz overtaking Verstappen. What happened there? Was Verstappen sleeping? Because it was a really clean, nice overtake from Sainz, braking much later and just completely making the corner with all four wheels, I even think. And that looked like a very, very clever, very well-performed move.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised that Verstappen didn't. It almost looked like he wasn't prepared for that. But again, this goes to back to what I said earlier on the fact that there are some weekends where, I mean, I think that Sainz is intelligence as a driver and able to assess situations in the quick intensity that you have during a race is very good. But there are some weekends where he just he the you can see from the practices and from the qualifyings that it's going to be a good weekend for him, where he's just really on point. And I felt that this weekend was that, and I think that is a very good reflection and example of it, because the awareness that he had and the ability to make the move that he did, and just the also the fact that, you know, the reaction that Verstappen had wasn't at the point where he was able to really handle it from a defensive point side, which is also surprising again, because I mean, Verstappen, we just saw in the previous race, like his excellence when it comes to a defensive point, defensive side. So either way, I thought it was a very, very brilliant move by Sainz, and I think that it was one of the defining moves that obviously secured his result at the end of the race.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was a defining moment. And after Sainz had passed Verstappen, it was then Norris' turn to at least try and pass Verstappen. But that seemed to be a little bit more challenging. And Verstappen put up a little bit more of a fight than he did with Sainz, Cesar. So going into that that fight, and I think it's going to be probably the main talking point, not just for us, but probably for everybody, just right after the US Grand Prix, where, of course, we had very similar situations. So these were the penalties went the other way. Can you describe what you how you read that situation and the lap where they were fighting with each other on turn 4 and turn 8?
I think that's what we all were looking for, to be honest. Even though, obviously, for Max fans, it wasn't the result that I think Max fans wanted. But I mean, that's, I think, what one is expecting from a championship fight. Keeps it on as well. I mean, we saw last week Lando didn't have anything against Max, but this week, you know, going up into that corner, it was like, okay, something's gonna happen, because every time they come together, it's amazing. So I was pretty excited, and yes, I mean, Max is, like you mentioned, Sam, he's great at defending, and he's, I think, if not the best, one of the best to do it. So was he maybe a little bit too aggressive this time, and he couldn't get away with it? Probably. I don't know. You know, the stewards probably were like, "All right, that's too many, Max. We have to penalize you." And then, well, so it was first in turn 4, I believe, when Lando had to, what? I think he
Yes.
had to get out of the corner, so they didn't crash. And then Lando's on front of him, and then I think it was in corner 7 or 8 where I don't know what y'all saw or think, and I'm curious, but I thought for some reason that Lando was given the place back, but I'm not sure. He was just preparing to take the curbs, and then Max just comes straight and gets him off the track, which at that point is like, all right, like, two things in a row. Obviously, they're gonna go look into it now, and yeah, I just, I don't know. I thought it probably was a bit over the top. I mean, I love good racing, but I don't know. What are y'all thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the turn 7 one that you mentioned, I think that was definitely in my opinion, a very obvious penalty. I mean, he just pretty much he went straight over and ran Lando wide. I mean, it was very clear to me that should have been deserved. And I think the first one as well. I also believe that probably in the stewards' minds, when we go back to last weekend, and we were just discussing it, and we were obviously discussing it at length in terms of the penalty that was handed to Lando, and did we think that at that point in time that Max should have also been handed a penalty? And I know that it's also been a major talking point, of course, over this past week. And I mean, we were talking about the fact that, and Anton, you had mentioned a pretty great breakdown last weekend as to why you felt like that was something that he should have deserved, that both of them should have fairly received the penalty. And so now we go into this weekend and we see, especially on turn seven, just a very obvious penalty that is running him wide. I think that they probably made the decision to give the 10-second penalty on both of those, and obviously ending up being a 20-second penalty in total, likely because of maybe a little bit more leniency on the previous weekend. Now they're seeing it again, and it's even more of a bold move. Whether or not people agree with that, I'm not sure, but in my opinion, I do think that they were deserved. At the end of the race, he did make a funny joke, which I did think was a little, I thought it was quite humorous. He had mentioned the fact that during his 20-second penalty, when he was waiting, he could have had a martini or some sort of drink while he was waiting for for it to be over. In true Max fashion, he makes some sort of a joke about it. But look, I think that things like that have to be, as much as there are some times where I will always vocalize the fact that racing is important. You have to let drivers race. I also think that in some cases, when you are preventing as a driver being able to actually truly race each other, then that's where maybe you step in and the penalty is deserved. Anton, what were your thoughts? I'm curious to know.
Yeah, well, last week Ajit and I managed to agree on something, which is a rare occasion. But we said that both the drivers should have deserved a penalty, and I would say that Max should have gotten a 10-second penalty for forcing Norris off track, and then Norris for overtaking off track should have also gotten a penalty. So with the one from last week, I didn't completely agree. What happened this week, I agree with both of what you guys were saying on that first. On that first turn four incident, I think Verstappen clearly drove Norris off track. I cannot really see or read any way around it. And then on the second occasion in turn eight, that was even more ridiculous. I mean, in the end, Max, it looked like he forgot to brake altogether, and that was very. I mean, that could have been an additional penalty for me for dangerous driving, because it was really quite reckless. And I mean, Norris making sure that he avoided the accident, that was some good craftsmanship, because they could have very well gotten together. And I feel like Verstappen really didn't mind at that point whether they would or not. And I don't think that that's fair racing. I mean, like Cesar was saying, I'm also a fan of hard racing, but this was just a little bit over the edge for me. At the same time, Leclerc actually managed to overtake the both of them. And I don't know if that, of course, I don't think Verstappen was really waiting for that. But then after that happened, you know, Norris still didn't pass because of that second maneuver. Verstappen was still ahead of Norris, so he could actually hold up Norris a little bit and create a gap towards Leclerc, so that when the penalties were going to come, and of course, you know, you hear Verstappen on the radio as if he's surprised by the penalties, but of course, I feel that in the back of his head, he knew that they were coming, but he was able to hold up Norris, who was, I guess, just also slightly afraid to really try and make another move, because in the end, you know, already two coming togethers and a third could have been disastrous. So he was afraid. Verstappen at the same time was holding Norris back. Leclerc was creating a gap between Verstappen and Leclerc. So I think that was like 7 or 8 seconds up until the point where Verstappen then decided to pit. He was complaining about his tires. And yeah, the gap between Leclerc and Norris was, I don't know, was 7 seconds. Then after both Leclerc and Norris pitted, it went down. I think Leclerc also had a slower pit stop than Norris had. It was a 3.1 and Norris had a 2.3. I think when he came out, it was about 4.5 seconds. And then a couple of laps later, it actually grew even to 5.2 or around that. And then Norris started to steadily bite back and get closer to Leclerc. And I'm skipping some other stuff, because in the meantime, we actually also had a fight between the Mercedeses, where actually Hamilton was ahead of Russell. Russell then overtook Hamilton, and that would be a fight until the end of the race as well, which was an interesting one to watch. You know, of course, with us knowing that Hamilton's going to go to Ferrari, but having quite the hard time recently to be on top of Russell. So that was an interesting fight as well. And then going back to the Norris Leclerc one, just before the end, I don't know how many laps before the end, but that was a heart in mouth moment, no, for Ferrari fans, where Leclerc just completely snapped and had a moment of oversteer and just almost right went into the barriers.
Oh yeah, that could have ended up far worse. I mean, his reaction, his ability to react was very impressive, because like I said, heaven forbid if he ended up in the barriers, we would be having an entirely different conversation in terms of a Ferrari result. And I mean, for Ferrari at this point, the result that they had this weekend secured their advance over Red Bull in the constructors. So now they are in a position that maybe 10 races ago, we wouldn't have been probably entertaining them in that conversation. And here we are, today doing that. I think going into even just discussing the Ferraris in general, we're seeing quite a late strength that they are having in their pace and overall in their performance, whether it's with the drivers or whether it's with the team in many aspects, whether it's with the development of the car itself. Tire degradation has always been a huge factor that they've been struggling with, and we can see that they have definitely increased their ability to have a more positive result in that area. And then also pit stops, I see Ferrari really, the improvements that they have made have been substantial in my opinion. And with the strength of Carlos, I mean, we are going to see Lewis next year, and I think that that's going to be very interested. I am sure that we are all excited to see Lewis in red and see what that's going to be. But ultimately, I just think that Ferrari is really at the top of their game right now, and I don't want to jinx them by saying that, but I think that the last two weekends have definitely been very good for them. And yes, Leclerc may have finished, could have been a 1-2, but ultimately I think he also played a huge part in that end result. And I mean, just going back to Mercedes as well, I found that their battle, their on-track battle, was one of the most exciting ones during the entire race. And I thought what was interesting as well was they were able to have this battle, but they were able to do it in a respectful way. And I appreciated that, because of course, you know, that may not necessarily be the case sometimes when you have two drivers racing against each other. Plus, we saw Hamilton last weekend. We would call it pretty much an off weekend for him. So to see him come back, and we know his struggles, like you mentioned, Anton, with the car, and to be able to battle with Russell and the two of them kind of go wheel to wheel in some parts of the track during some elements of the race, I found it quite exciting. I definitely found it quite exciting for Mercedes. Cesar, what was some of the moments that you would say that bring to that were highlights for you during the race?
Definitely, I guess to jump on the back of that, the Mercedes fight was amazing. You know, I think we all love a good team fight, especially when the cars are good. And obviously, it wasn't for the race win, but still, no one likes team orders. And I think the fact that Hamilton is going to Ferrari and George Russell is staying, maybe that played a factor in why the team said, you know, go ahead and race, but do it clean. And also, yeah, a lot of factors, right? But yes, I thought the Mercedes fight was really good. Also, I think, what was it? Russell's front wing had something, like I think the left flap was not positioned properly or was broken a little bit, and he still was able to keep Hamilton in the back for quite some time. So I really enjoy that, as well as, yes, Lando and Leclerc. I mean, to be honest, I thought, okay, this is going to be the race. Ferrari 1-2 again. We're going to have Lando in the back. And then I think as soon as they started hitting the back markers, that's when Lando started making up some time. And I feel like he usually does this. He kind of like slows down, maybe he saves some tires, and then in the end he pushes, and I think that's what he did this time. And he was able to get in the back of him, and I think eventually he was going to overtake him. But yes, definitely my heart stopped when I saw Leclerc go off, because definitely that would have been very sad for Ferrari fans. But probably safety car, or of course probably gonna pit, and we're gonna have another race. So like you said, Sam, probably gonna have another conversation. But I quite enjoyed it. Obviously, me being a Checo fan, I kind of enjoyed also that Checo Liam fight, even though it wasn't for much, but maybe it was for a race seat for at Red Bull. We don't know. But I thought that was interesting. Kind of made some racing interesting for Checo in the race after everything, and obviously he ended up on the wrong side of it, being a dead last. But I thought that was interesting. And I don't know if I saw a video, I don't know if you all saw it after the race. Someone noticed that when Liam was passing Checo on the straight, he flipped him off. And I thought that was pretty ballsy for Liam to do that in Mexico, especially with Mexican fans being very passionate. I would probably wouldn't have done that, but I thought that just added some spice to the whole conversation on the Red Bull seat.
I saw it, but I also saw it being commented as if it was a middle finger. I think it was his index finger, to be fair. But yeah, that was interesting to see. I saw another comment that somebody said, yeah, he was pointing to Checo that the sky was getting darker and it was going to start to rain, which actually Russell thought at some point. And I think that remembered me of him seeing some sweat in his visor. That was last season. But that was actually a
Yes.
funny moment because I had sort of forgotten altogether that rain existed. Like I hadn't even considered it as a possibility. But I think even without rain, the race was interesting enough. Like you were saying, that fight between Lawson and Perez was good to watch. I actually thought at some point that Perez was also somewhat pushing Lawson off track. I was expecting an investigation that didn't come. And Lawson would later also be involved still in a accident with Colapinto, where they, where they hit each other, damaging. Well, if I'm not mistaken, there was a lot of things that happened, but it was the front wing of Lawson that was damaged. He had to go into. He still went into the pits. That was unfortunate too. And like you were saying, it's good to note that Russell actually for a good part of the race was driving with a somewhat broken front wing. Yeah, the front part of the wing was on one side, was not well connected to the nose of the wing, and I think you actually lose quite a bit of downforce with that. I mean, of course, the wing also becomes more flexible, but I think actually, well, it must make the car quite a bit more unbalanced if only one side is dropping off and the other one is not. So that's actually good to note. And then we still had the fight for fastest lap, which was an interesting one too, because it was going to go between. Well, it was going back and forth, I think, between Norris and Colapinto at some point, but then it was clear that whomever was going to be third was going to have a try at that fastest lap because of the gap towards Russell. So that was interesting to see who would take that. And actually, I'm saying towards Russell, but of course, in the end, it was Hamilton who was on fourth. But yeah, both. Well, of course, Lawson had already pitted for changing his nose, so I thought that he was gonna try and set it. Then Perez also went in, Leclerc also went in, and in the end, I think Leclerc set it. I don't know the exact time, but I think he was about a second faster even than Perez. So that was another point for Ferrari on the board. And yeah, it's interesting to see that fight for the Constructor Championship now, because you know, with the situation, it's actually interesting. I went into it, and I because I was curious, I was thinking to myself, when is the last time that we actually had a winner of the Driver Championship with his team finishing third in the championship for constructors? And Do you guys have any idea when that was? When was the last time that that actually happened?
No, not at all. But
I read something about this, and I know it's been a while, like a lot of years ago, right?
Yeah, it was actually in 1983. It was Nelson Piquet who won the driver championship that year for Brabham, but Brabham finished third. And actually, interestingly, the year before that, it was even more extreme when Keke Rosberg won the championship, and he won it for Williams, and Williams that year finished fourth in a constructor championship. Wow. But yeah, of course, in those times, a lot fewer races, so I guess it's not really comparable, but still, it's quite, yeah, it's an interesting take on this whole situation. And I guess it's going to be interesting for the last couple of races, because I mean, of course, I would say it's still up for grabs for anyone. I mean, in the end, like you were saying a couple of minutes ago in the podcast, Cesar, yeah, Ferrari's been having a real resurgence lately, and they're doing well, and they're performing well with both drivers. And Piastri's been having some tough luck, like this weekend in the USA with the sprint race, he didn't qualify well. Red Bull's is up and down and don't seem to have the fastest car. Perez is struggling, so it's going to be interesting to see whether Ferrari actually are going to be able to take on McLaren, and that's definitely something to look forward to towards the end of this season.
I think it's going to be fun to watch, you know, what Ferrari is able to do and see if they're able to take up on McLaren, the constructors' championship. I'm really looking forward for the last four races and two sprints.
Yeah, and I think that's actually the really interesting element of this as well, is that we have two sprints, and you know, with these extra added points that are now going to weigh, and the tight battle of the constructors itself, we really don't know where we're going to stand. And I think that it's just going to add an extra element of just excitement, but also mixed with really a big question mark. And I think that this season has been very much a reflection of that. Week in and week out, we never know what to expect in terms of performance. We never know what to expect in terms of truly who's going to be on the podium. And now we're sitting here with a tight battle in the constructors, two sprint races that will give drivers and also teams the ability to maximize their points, and very, very close performances coming out of Ferrari and McLaren. I think that next weekend, though, I would say that based on the track specific, I think that it caters more to McLaren. But again, it's really, we really, really have no idea. We could say that, and it could be a Red Bull 1-2. Maybe Perez comes back and fights in fine form. Who knows? All right, Anton. So after this weekend, as always, let's take a look at how many people, first of all, played the game this weekend. And I know you have those numbers.
Yeah, I do. It would be quite bad if I didn't.
That's
so
true.
We had 1,079 people playing the game this weekend, a few more than we had last week. And we had an average score of 34.1, a little bit higher than we did in some of the previous races. Lowest score this time out was 4.5. And I'm going to put the question to both of you. How many people do you think correctly predicted this podium in this order with Sainz, Norris, Leclerc?
Okay, well, I know there was at least one.
Does she listen to the name Sam?
I think so. I'm very excited to get to my results this weekend. But I am going to say 12 people.
I'm going to say 4.
All right, actually, to be really honest with both of you, I was super surprised to see this. I mean, I knew that after last race there was going to be more people who were going to put the Ferraris higher up, but there were actually 42 people who had a correct podium. Oh. Sam, so yeah, you're not alone.
Wow. Well, that's great. Oh. And again, a lot of confidence in Ferrari.
Yeah, and actually quite a bit of confidence in Sainz too. Now, of course, he had a very good sprint race in the USA. That's for sure. I would have expected a lot more people actually to go with a Leclerc win, which is what I did. But anyway, we're going to get to our scores a little bit later. Let's first look at the winner of this weekend for Forecast F1. So we're going to start with P3, which was scored by Omaima Patel from South Africa, 77 points. And on P2, Sam, I'm sorry, it's not you, it's somebody else from Canada. It's Aidan Shaw with 79.5 points. And on P1 this weekend, from Argentina, Nicolas Wüthrich with 84 points. He actually didn't only have a correct podium, but he had a correct top four. So that's what got him the... And I think he also had Hülkenberg correct on P9. Anyway, a P1 finish for Nicolas. And actually, it's interesting because we have a lot of people from Argentina that have been playing the game for the last two seasons. But this is actually the very first time that an Argentinian player wins the game. So congratulations to Nicolas for that. And also with that 84 points, he is the only one after this weekend that gets into the high scores, the South American high scores. He enters on P17 with his 84 points. And actually, looking at the top 20, it's also the first Cambodian player to ever get into the top 20. On P19, we have Kimsrong Pagnavati, and she scored 67.5 points. Actually, the previous highest score for a Cambodian player was P21, which happened last week. So they're improving too. That was a different player, by the way. Before we get to our scores, I know, Sam, you're eagerly waiting to hear yours. But we first go to the championship and have a look at that. And we see that on P1, Rosario Finzi from France scored 32.1 points, actually thereby totaling 997.3 points, so almost getting to the 1,000-point score mark. And 32.1 doesn't sound like a whole lot of points, but actually he's increasing his lead because on P2, Annelie Boehmer from the Netherlands scored only 17.5. So actually, the gap is increasing by quite a bit. The gap now between P1 and P2 is 32.2 points, quite a bit. And on P3, we still have Sumit Jaiswal from India scoring 21.5. So altogether, Rosario is taking a higher lead than he already was. So with only four races ahead of us, of course, like you guys said, also two sprint races. But I would say his lead is quite substantial. Looking at the scores for all countries, and let's just look at the top 25 for countries, we see that, well, actually, before we go to that, Sam, let me put a question to you. How many, from which country do you think we had the most players this week?
Well, I know I have been saying Kenya for several weeks, and I'm going to still stick with that. I'm going to say Kenya.
Yeah. Well, there were 70 players from Kenya. That was the most from any country this weekend. On P2, we had Lebanon, 65 players, and we had 48 players from Argentina. And Kenya also goes up four places in the rankings. And we also had three Kenyans actually in the top 20. So they scored some good points. Actually, Tracy, who's been on our podcast this season twice, she was on P5, so very good result for her. And India and Pakistan also go up one place. The USA goes down one place, and also Czech Republic and France go two places down. The country that moves up the most amount of places is Barbados, moving up seven places, now on P86. So that was summarizing all of the other players' scores, and now we get to Sam's score.
Drum roll.
Right. Well, you already established that you had the correct podium, so you indeed did go for Sainz, Norris, Leclerc, and you were telling me it took a while for you to decide on that. No,
it did. I'm very happy obviously with my final decision. However, my first prediction actually had max in P1. So I'm glad I didn't do that. Now, I don't think that the rest of my picks were pretty accurate, but I'll take the podium.
You actually had a correct prediction for Hülkenberg on P9, so you scored 2 points for that as well. You scored a total of 70.3 points, and that got you to the very first page. You're on P10.
Ooh, very nice.
Nice,
Very
congrats.
nice. I'm pleased with that result.
Yeah, given that 42 players had a correct podium, you did very well. That also means that in the overall competition, of course, you're moving up. You were P34 after the United States Grand Prix. Where do you hope that you settle in, more or less?
Well, I don't know, but the most important thing is just that I am higher than you because we have this tight competition between ourselves. So as long as I've increased my lead, then I'm satisfied.
Oh, very much so.
Awesome.
You've definitely increased your lead.
It's funny that you mentioned that because we have a tight competition, the three of us, in the overall standings, I think. So
That's true.
for that, I think you're going to be on top of both of us. And Anton, I don't know how you did this week, but I'm sure you did better than you.
Actually, I'm now looking at it, and you're very, very right. The three of us, before the start of this weekend, we were only 5 places apart from one another because Sam was on P34, I was on P37, and you were on P32. So actually, we're talking to 1/3 of the top 30, or sorry, between 30 and place 40. Anyway, okay. But let's see where you ended up, Sam. You moved from 34 to place 7, actually.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
Congrats,
I
Sam.
did
That's
not
amazing.
see that coming. I did not see that coming. I don't know how that long that's gonna last. It's probably this week, but that is nice. I'm very surprised.
No, it's a very nice score. Proud of you, and like you're saying, you definitely increased the lead to me. So I definitely have some work on my plate for the last part of this season. Let's have a look at Cesar's score. Cesar, so like I said, you were on P32. Do you remember what podium you went with for this race?
Yes, I do. Norris, Leclerc, Verstappen. So
Yeah, that's
not
right.
very
So
good.
none of those were in the correct place. Yeah, it wasn't a great score. You scored only 24 points. That got you to a
Oof.
weekend score of P827.
Oh
Could have
my.
been better. Yeah, you dropped from place P32. You dropped 13 places. So you go to P45. So you're still in the top 50. So that's still encouraging. I mean, I mentioned it already, but you were on P72 at the end of last season, so you're still doing better than you were last year. Plus, there's a lot more players in the game this season than there was last season. So altogether, I think you can still be happy about your performance. But this week's was not the best. I remember you scored super high, I think, in Japan, if I'm not mistaken. I need to look exactly at your score, but I think you had like 97 points or something.
I did, yes.
That was a very good result.
Yes, I think at one point this season I was up there in the top three, and it's just been downhill from there. But again, I think a lot has to do great, all the teams coming together, which is amazing. So sad for my results, but happy for the overall racing of the Formula One fans.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at it now. So in Japan, you finished second, actually. You had second place and scored 97 points, which is still the seventh highest score worldwide this season, and also the second highest score in North America. So that was a very, very good weekend for you. And while looking at my weekend, I went with a podium. I mixed up the Ferrari. So I went with Leclerc, Norris, Sainz. Scored 38.5 points, which got me P316, and I go from P37 in the standings to P32. So I actually
Okay.
take over your previous position, Cesar. But yeah, I guess both of us need to show our well, I don't know the exact word, Sam, but let's just say you had a very good weekend, and we're proud of you.
Good
Well,
job,
thank
Sam.
you. Thank
We'll
you.
get you next time.
but I'm sure you will. I was just going to say that. I know the competition is tight, so I definitely expect you guys to claw back.
All right, so I guess that leaves us only with playing the quiz. So let me just lay it out for those that don't often listen. So we are going to look at the 10 finishing positions and fastest lap. And we're going to have a look at how many players in the game predicted those drivers in the correct position. So we already established that there were 1,079 players playing the game. And we're going to start with P1 Sainz. And Sam, you can decide whether you go first or not. And you need to guess how many people predicted Sainz in that P1 spot. Now, we already established, of course, that there were 42 players who had a correct podium. So at least we know that there's 42 players. How many others had Sainz on P1 out of 1,079 players?
Okay. I think I'm going to go first on this one, and I'm going to say 57.
Okay. I'm going to say, 72.
All right, that means that the first point goes to Cesar, because actually it was a lot more. I was already saying I was surprised by the number of people who had a correct podium, but there were 211 players that went with a Sainz win this weekend.
Wow. Again, another surprise.
That's a big number.
Yeah, that is a very big number. And that means first point on the table for you, Cesar, means we're going to go to the second position, which was, of course, Norris. And that one's for you.
For Norris, I'm going to say maybe 540.
Okay. I'm going to go just less of that. I'm going to say 482.
Okay, it was a bit fewer, still quite a high number. It was 288. So, well, you're almost, 200 off, but that means it's one against one. And we're going to move to that second Ferrari, Sam. That was Leclerc on P3. How many people put him there?
Oh, I am going to go with... 312.
I'm going to say 240.
Nice. That means it's a point for Cesar, because it was, you're pretty close actually. It was 227 people that had Leclerc on
very
P3.
Close.
And that means go to the first finishing Mercedes, which was Hamilton on P4.
For Hamilton, I am going to say 150.
I think I'm going to go in the 70s. I'm going to say 74.
All right. This is quite a competitive quiz. This point goes to Sam. You're not too far off. You're only 21 places away from the right answer. It was 53 people that went with Hamilton on P4. So that means we move to the second Mercedes, Sam, which was Russell on P5.
Russell P5. I'm gonna say 16. I almost hesitate on that. I'm gonna increase that actually. I'm gonna say 83.
I am gonna say 62. 63. That's George Russell's number.
Ah, good one.
It is indeed. It's not the right answer though. It's 96. So actually, Sam's closer to that one. Only 13 away. Pretty close. So it's 3-2, which means we move to Verstappen. It's an interesting one. I'm curious to see what you guys think. How many people put him on P6? I think I had him on P5 myself, but I was expecting some engine penalties, but those didn't come through. How many people put Verstappen on P6, Cesar? Wait, Sam,
oh no, it's
right?
Sam. It's Sam. Yes, Sam just got the point.
No, but I think we might have done something wrong, because Sam actually started and this is P6, so it should be Cesar. So I think we switched it around. Well, doesn't really matter too much.
Point, or
who wants to go
one?
First?
Who wants to go?
Sorry?
Is it whoever wins the point gets to go, or is it like 1-1?
No, it's so Sam started, then it was you, then it was Sam, then it was you.
Oh, okay.
But I think we might have screwed that one around at some point. Doesn't really matter. Well, who wants to go?
You go ahead, Sam.
Okay, so this is we are guessing now Verstappen. I'm gonna say 43.
Verstappen, P6. It's a difficult one because I just like you, Anton, was thinking about power unit penalties. I'm gonna say 100, 100.
All right, I was just quickly checking whether my camera was not on, whether Sam was reading my notes, but you're right, it was 43 people.
Really?
Wow.
Wow.
Okay, I
Okay.
think I'm gonna
Out of the
retire.
blue. Yeah.
I just hope I carry the same energy into next week.
Well, I mean, it's been a good
Yes,
week
Sam, you
for
have
you so far.
high expectations from you, Sam, for the rest of the season.
I know. The bar's set high at this point.
Yep.
Well, it's still a close battle here at this, so you never know. I very well could lose this one. And I have many times over.
Well, we're four against two, so it is going to be interesting. I'm going to give the next one to Cesar to go first, which is Magnussen on P7.
There's no way a lot of people thought about this, but I'm going to say 20, 25.
I think I'm gonna go actually higher than that, and I'm gonna say 28.
Oh.
Well, it's one of those that is, I guess, not that easy to guess, but it was only five people who went with Magnussen
Oh,
on
wow.
P7, so very little. So that's a point for Cesar. Actually, when it's so few people, we usually read out loud who were those people that dared to put Magnussen on that spot. And those were Gonzalo Buccini from Argentina, Felipe Fonseca from Portugal, Marcos Rodriguez from Uruguay, Yacine Tifawi from Algeria, and Akos Serresechnies. Well, I hope he never wins the weekend, and I need to really start practicing that name. But he's from Hungary, so all of those scored the full 6 points for Magnussen on P7. Congratulations, because I would have never dared to put Magnussen over there. I actually had, I think I had Hülkenberg on P8. Actually, Sam, you had Hülkenberg correctly on P9. Anyway, we're gonna get to Hülkenberg. So you already know that one person had that one correct. But we're first going to
True.
go to the other McLaren on P8. Sam, how many people put Piastri there?
I'm going to say 14.
Piastri. I don't know why I'm thinking so much about this, but 18.
All right, that means we're back at a draw because it was 34. So that means points for Cesar. It means it's four against four. We're gonna go to Hülkenberg. Well, I already gave away that it was at least one person, Cesar. So how many other people had Hülkenberg on P9?
This definitely has to be up there once, so I'm gonna say 720.
Okay. I'm gonna go less than that. I'm gonna say 127.
Ooh, that's very, very close to the right answer, Sam. You're only 11 away. It's 138. Yeah, it is, I would say, still
I don't know
relatively a
what's
popular
happening right
one,
now.
but 720 is just a little bit out of the league. Although,
Too
you gotta
much.
say, I mean, you never know. Actually, we had Colapinto on P10 last weekend in the USA, and that's one of the fan favorites for forecast because we had 220 people who put him there, which also surprised me. So
Right.
you never know, but yeah, Sam, good guess. We're going to go to the last two, which is Gasly on P10 and fastest lap for Leclerc. But first, Sam, Gasly on P10.
I'm gonna say 42.
I'm going to say 100.
And I'm going to say it's going to be very tough to beat Sam this week, it seems, because you're only one away from the right answer. There was
No,
41
my
people who put Gasly
God.
on P10. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, Sam. Which
Sam,
also
you're on
means, actually,
fire.
it's
I
seven
swear
against
this has
four.
never happened
Yeah.
before. Anton will tell you that.
Well, you've been quite good, although you lost to Ajit last week, but that was a very close call.
Did.
You finished 9 against 10 with also predicting the sprint finishes. But yeah, you're 6 against 4 now, which means you've already won it. But let's play that last one too. I wanna hear from the two of you how many people you think how many people thought that Leclerc would finish that fastest lap. Who did you guys have for fastest lap?
Ooh, that's a very good question, you know, because I actually don't remember who I chose for fastest lap.
Okay, well, you went with Russell, Sam.
I know you know what I went with.
Cesar, what did you go with?
I went with Norris.
That's right. I also went with Norris, actually. At least Cesar remembers his pick, Sam.
I do remember my picks for the most part.
I'm cheating. I'm looking at the application. I'm looking at my predictions. So,
well,
there you go.
To be
Anton.
Fair, look, I'm also cheating because to find yours. Well, I knew from myself, but to find yours, I was also looking. I was looking at my game file. Anyway, okay. But we go back to Leclerc. How many people had Leclerc on the fastest lap?
Sam,
it should be Cesar going
first,
although. Oh, all right. It doesn't really matter.
Since you won already.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to say 112.
I am going to say 72.
Means the last point is also going to go to Sam. It was 250 people, almost a quarter of the people. That's quite interesting.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't think we see the Ferraris very often on fastest lap, but since they've been doing very good, it seems that all of a sudden a lot of people have been putting them there.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm going to blame Checo for the bad luck on the Mexican people.
For the tough weekend. Yeah, no, I understand.
Yes, yes. He sent me the bad luck.
Well, the thing is that actually the winner of the quiz gets to listen to his national anthem, so we'll be playing that of Sam's. And people must have been getting quite used to it. But it's going, you know, it's going on and off. One weekend you win, Sam, the other one you lose. But this was a very good result. Proud of you. Good weekend all together. I guess, what's it coming from? Yeah, I heard you also did a karting session, but I don't think you won that one, did you?
No, I did not. And although it wasn't a long enough karting session, our friend here who was our guest last weekend, Ajit, who if anyone has listened to Ajit and I when we do these quizzes, it sometimes can get a little bit heated. We are also friends that have a healthy dose of competition, and so when you put us in carts, I think that only intensifies. And so yes, I lost, and I definitely heard about it afterwards at great length because Ajit won. But
typical
it was an incredible, it was an incredible experience. Would do it all again. And quite frankly, I think I'm looking ahead as to when I'm going to book it so that we can change that outcome. And I can be the one with at the top of the podium.
Nice. That's the spirit. Well, for us, I don't think we need to wait very long for making new predictions because the Brazil weekend's right around the corner.
That's
and
right.
Actually, it's going to be a sprint weekend. So that means... Well, we were already talking about making blind predictions, but this is going to be one of those. So, yeah, it's going to be a very early one. Of course, it's again on our side of the world, and that means that it's actually. I need to look at the exact times. Let me have a look. In the meantime, I'm going to ask the two of you, what are you looking forward to for the race in Brazil, for the weekend in Brazil? Let's say that.
Well, I guess I can say that, first of all, this is one of my favorite tracks. I absolutely love this track. It carries so much history, so many great historic battles, historic races. So I really much looking forward to it. I always love it on the calendar. And the fact that there's a sprint race kind of seems like I'm saying the same thing as I did at the last sprint race. I think I pretty much exercised this exact same opinion, but I really do believe that it's going to be exciting, and I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we talked about it. There's 4 races left on the calendar, and there's a lot to there's a lot of things that are still unanswered. So I think we'll have a better idea, or at least we can hope that we'll have a better idea as to if those questions maybe could potentially be answered at the end of this race. But Cesar, what are you looking forward to when it comes to next week?
I am looking forward to more drivers' championship drama. I hope there's something. I mean, I know it'll probably something happen between Max and Lando, and I'm really looking forward to it. So that's, I'm very excited. I love what is it, triple headers, I guess. I know something will happen. I'm looking forward to it. And as you said, I think this is a great track, a lot of history. I'm also looking forward to see how many people from Argentina actually show up to see Franco Colapinto, which, I mean, wanted to mention since the beginning, he has been doing amazing for stepping up for Logan Sargeant. So I can't wait to see how many people are there to cheer on him.
Yeah, I think you summed it up quite well. I'm excited about the exact same things. I mean, like you were saying, the Norris Verstappen fight is just, I think it's ready for yet another chapter. It's great to watch. There's some drama every week, and I mean, it's been a couple of years since we've been waiting for that, and I guess we can say since 21 this has been the next real battle that we were all waiting for, and it's great to have it on our hands. And I couldn't agree more about your opinion on Colapinto as well. I think he's doing great. Be interesting to see. I'm also interested to see the battle between, I guess the newer ones are who are in F1 is are nice to watch. So it's also going to be very interesting. Yuki had a tough weekend, and it's going to be very it's going to be interesting to see how he matches up with Lawson, who I think is performing very well. Wouldn't know whether to say under pressure, yes or no, because I mean, maybe he's, you know, he looks at this as he has six races at the end of the season to get into it and to show what he's made of in order to secure that seat for next year, whichever that seat will be. But it's nice to see him matching up against Yuki, who I personally quite like. Not the most consistent driver, but always something happening. Unfortunately, it happened very early on in this on this Sunday. But yeah, altogether, can't wait to get to the third race of this triple header. And yeah, it's another sprint race, which well, we talked about it quite a bit of times on the podcast, that there's definitely some positive and negative sides on the sprint race weekends. But then again, it's going to be an action-packed one, and I'm sure it's going to be exciting because Interlagos is a great track. I think we all love it. It's somewhat of a fan favorite. I agree with what you said at the end, Sam, when we were talking about the race of this week. I think it's a track that caters quite well to the McLaren, so it's going to be interesting to see whether Norris can diminish the gap even further towards Verstappen, and whether Verstappen is gonna get even more nervous and needs to even drink a couple of martinis ahead of the weekend to calm him down, because it seems that, you know, whenever you put him under pressure, he does start to make some moves that are questionable, and well, we know now that they can also get punished, so it's gonna be super interesting. And can't wait, and can't wait to make blind predictions. I think that's also something that all of us are, you know, thinking about ahead of the weekend. Like, who am I going to put on P1 for this weekend? Like, I've been thinking about it for so long for this weekend. I know in the history of forecast, I've only put in Leclerc on P1 once. I think that was for the Monaco weekend in the first year of forecast F1, which actually was the weekend that Perez won Monaco, I think. Anyway, so that doesn't happen very often. I did it this week, didn't turn out well, but I wouldn't say that I wouldn't do it again. But then again, yeah, Norris, Verstappen, Sainz with his performance this week. I mean, it's just all very difficult to tell.
I would like to add a little bit of spiciness for the blind prediction, but I'm looking at the weather for Interlagos, and I don't know if it's, I don't know if there's many places where the track weather is. Anyways, I don't know how accurate this, but I've seen a couple while we were talking, and it looks like it might be raining for the weekend. So if that is the case, then it's going to be quite the race.
Music
Definitely
to
a wet
Anton's
Interlagos.
Yes, I'm very looking forward to it.
Yeah, going to be nice. Well, I'd like to thank you very much, Cesar, for coming on the podcast. I think you're due for a rematch with Sam later on some point, maybe next season, because yeah, everyone that loses against Sam usually gets a rematch. That's one of the unwritten rules of Forecast F1.
I was going to say I need to come again just to beat Sam, and then I may retire forever. That way she cannot beat me again.
Nice.
No, thank you. Challenge thank you accepted. Both so much for inviting me. Oh, Sam, yes. And if we ever run into a race weekend again, then we may have to go karting. Because I also like to kart against you.
Absolutely. I would love that.